And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is a Ken Hudnall show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is January 5th, fifth day of the brand new year. Only 360 days remain till the year's over with. On this day in 1477, the Battle of Nancy. Charles the Bold is defeated and killed in a conflict with René II, Duke of Lorraine. Burgundy subsequently becomes part of France. 1675, Battle of Colmar. French army beats Brandenburg. 1757, Louis XV of France survives an assassination attempt by Robert Francois Damiens. Last person to be executed in France by drawing and quartering. That's the traditional and gruesome form of capital punishment used for regicides and those that attempt regicides. 1781, American Revolutionary War. Richmond, Virginia is burned by British naval forces led by none other than Benedict Arnold. 1875, the Palais Garnier, one of the most famous opera houses in the world, is inaugurated in Paris. 1895, the Dreyfus Affair. French Army officer Alfred Dreyfus is stripped of his rank and sentenced to life imprisonment on Doubles Island. And in 1900, Irish nationalist leader John Edward Redmond calls for revolt against the Brits. 1901, Kappa Alpha Psi, the world's third oldest and largest black fraternity, is founded at Indiana University. 1912, the sixth all-Russian conference of the Russian Social Democratic Labor Party opens up. In the course of the conference, Vladimir Lenin and his supporters break from the rest of the party to form the Bolshevik movement. 1913, the First Balkan War, the Battle of Limnos begins. Greek Admiral Pavlos Kantarotis forces the Turkish fleet to retreat to its base within the Dardanelles, from which it didn't venture for the rest of the war. 1914, Ford Motor Company announces an 8-hour workday and a minimum wage of $5. Minimum daily wage of $5 in salary, plus bonuses, of course. 1919, a German Workers' Party, which had become the Nazi Party, is founded in Munich. 1925, Nellie Taylor Ross of Wyoming becomes the first female governor in the U.S. 1933, construction of the Golden Gate Bridge begins in San Francisco Bay. 1941, Amy Johnson, a 37-year-old pilot and first woman to fly solo from London, Australia, disappears after bailing out of her plane over the River Thames. It's presumed she's dead, but the body was never found. 1944, the Daily Mail becomes the first major London newspaper to be published on both sides of the Atlantic. 1945, Soviet Union recognizes a new pro-Soviet provisional government of the Republic of Poland. 1949, in his State of the Union address, President Truman unveils his Fair Deal program. We make it, we give it to you, you blow it. That's his Fair Deal program. 1950, in the Sverdlovsk air disaster, all 19 of those on board are killed, including the almost entire national ice hockey team of the Soviet Air Force. That's 11 players, a team doctor, and a masseur. 1953, the play Waiting for Godot by Samuel Beckett gets its premiere in Paris. 1957, in a speech given to the U.S. Congress, President Eisenhower announces the establishment of what would later be called the Eisenhower Doctrine. Now, that was a policy enunciated by Eisenhower within a special message to Congress on the situation in the Middle East. Under this doctrine, a Middle Eastern country could request American economic assistance or aid from military U.S. military forces if it's being threatened by armed aggression. He singled out the Soviet threat in his doctrine by authorizing the commitment of U.S. forces to secure and protect the territorial integrity and political independence of these nations. Those that request such aid against overt armed aggression from any nation controlled by international communism. Now, the phrase international communism was said to make the doctrine much broader than simply responding to Soviet military action. A danger could be linked to communists in any nation that could conceivably invoke the doctrine. The Arabs weren't exactly a fan of it, but you can't please everybody. 1967, Cultural Revolution. Shanghai People's Commune is established, following the seizure of power from local city officials by revolutionaries. 1968, Alexander Dubček becomes a power in Czechoslovakia, effectively beginning what was known as the Prague Spring. Now, the Prague Spring was a period of political liberalization and mass protest in the Czechoslovak Socialist Republic. Now, during the reforms, there was a strong attempt by Dubček to grant additional rights to the citizens in an act of partial decentralization of the economy and the democratization. Of course, the Soviets weren't exactly a fan of it. 1969, the Venera 5 space probe is launched at 6:28 UTC from Baikonur. 1970, a 7.1 Tonghai earthquake shakes Tonghai County, Yunnan Province in China, with a maximum Mercalli intensity of 10, which is extreme. Between 10,000 and 15,000 people are known to have been killed. About another 26,000 are injured. 1975, the Tasman Bridge in Tasmania, Australia is struck by the bulk oil carrier Lake Illawarra. 12 people die. 1976, the Khmer Rouge proclaimed the Constitution of Democratic Kampuchea. 1976, the Troubles. The gunmen shoot dead 10 Protestant civilians after stopping their minibus at King's Mill in County Armagh, Northern Ireland, allegedly as a retaliation for a string of attacks on Catholic civilians in the area by loyalists, particularly the killing of 6 Catholics the night before. 1991, Georgian forces enter Sikkervale, the capital of South Ossetia in Georgia. It opens the 1991-92 South Ossetia War. Also in 1991, Somali Civil War. U.S. Embassy to Somalia in Mogadishu is evacuated by helicopter airlift days after the outbreak of violence in Mogadishu. 1993, the oil tanker MV Brayer runs aground on the coast of the Shetland Islands, spills 84,700 tons of crude oil. 2005, the dwarf planet Eros is discovered by Palomar Observatory-based astronomers, later motivating the International Astronomical Union to define the term planet for the first time. 2014, the launch of the communication satellite GSAT-14 aboard the GSLV MK2-D5 marks the first successful flight of an Indian gyrogenic engine. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances, Christian Feast Day, Charles of Mount Argus, John Newman in the Catholic Church, Pope Telesphorus, Simeon Salitis in the Latin Church, Harbin International Ice and Snow Sculpture Festival in Harbin, China, Juma Shinji in Japan, National Bird Day in the U.S., and it's the 12th day of Christmas and the 12th night of Christmas in Western Christianity. Let's see what else we got. Mao Zedong writes a single spark and start a prayer fire. 1940, the FCC hears the first transmission of FM radio, a clear, static-free signal. 1945, with Japan losing the war and most of the well-trained pilots gone, a new breed of pilots was born called kamikaze, or suicide bombers. Now, these pilots needed little training, and they could do a great deal of damage taking planes full of explosives and crashing them into ships. At Okinawa, they sank 30 ships and killed almost 5,000 Americans. In 1909, an agreement was signed on this date between Colombia, Panama, and the U.S. to make Panama an independent country. According to one news source, part of the reason for the encouraged succession of Panama is the fact that Colombia had claims of damages against the U.S. 1939, on this date, Amelia Earhart's declared officially dead. Now, her remains were never found, and the circumstances of her disappearance are still a mystery. 1943, Elizabeth Taylor started her first acting role while signed on with MGM when she was 11 years old. This was her first appearance in Lassie Come Home. But her first film debut was with Universal Studios when she was only 10. And that film was called There's One Born Every Minute. 1950, Gene Autry's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer hits number one on the Billboard pop chart, sold over 8 million copies, and later inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame in 1985. 1959... President Eisenhower established the Middle East as a Cold War battleground. And this happened in order to take action against communism. 1959, the record It Doesn't Matter Anymore was released by Buddy Holly. This was the last record before he died in a tragic accident that took his life as well as the life of Richie Valens and J.P. the Big Bopper Richardson. 2 months after his death, his last record reached as high as number 13 on the hit charts. He had written all his own songs and made what was later a standard musician setup of two guitars, a bass, and drums. 1970, United Mine Union leader Jock Jablonski, along with his wife and daughter, killed in a week before this day. Bodies were found July 5th on the family's farm. Members of the United Mine Workers Union leadership were hired for this project, the murder of the family. This action brought down the morale of the union, which dissolved a short time later. 1972, President Nixon signed a bill authorizing $5.5 million in funding to develop a space shuttle. Space Shuttle Columbia was launched in 1981. Also in 1981, a man was arrested and appeared in court in connection with the 13 murders across West Yorkshire over the previous 5 years. It was called the Yorkshire Ripper. His name was Peter William Sutcliffe. Lived at 6 Garden Lane in Bradford. He was charged with the murder of 20-year-old university student Jacqueline Hill, who was killed in Leeds 7 weeks before his arrest. 1982, landslide took place near San Francisco, killed 33 people, and caused the closing of the Golden Gate Bridge. 1985, Operation Moses took place. A secret operation by Israel to airlift thousands of Jewish Ethiopian refugees out of Sudan. Once news became public, it was suspended. 1993, peace talks were attempted in Addis Ababa by Ethiopia. These talks led to at least one person dying. Originally initiated by UN Secretary General Boutros Ghali to the Somalian government. 3 times within 5 days, angry crowds gathered in response to the proposal. Rocks and garbage were thrown at the UN headquarters. On this day in 1998, Sonny Bono, who used to sing with Cher, was killed in a skiing accident. Went into politics as a Republican congressman in 1994. He was also mayor of Palm Springs in 1988. He sang with Cher in the Sonny and Cher show. Recorded a number of musical hits. Got 10 gold records during his career. In 2001, public inquiry, chaired by Dame Janet Smith, was opened. In its final report, it concluded the former general practitioner Harold Shipman may have killed more than 300 of his patients, making him the worst serial killer in British history. 2009, the Israeli assault against Hamas militants in Gaza went into its 10th day with air attacks against mosques and the homes of some Hamas leaders. The death toll is put at more than 500. In 2010, on this date, the severe weather and one of the coldest snaps in decades, with snowfalls up to 12 inches, continued in the UK with more schools and airport closings. In 2010, on this date, Barack Obama said the Yemen-linked plot to bomb an airline over Detroit will not prevent the closure of the prison at Guantanamo Bay. Now, of course, he set a deadline of January 22nd. But in spite of the man so many looked at as a god, made a pronouncement, it didn't happen. This day in 2011... House of Representatives is formally taken over by the new Republican majority after the 2010 midterm elections. John Boehner of Ohio becomes the new speaker. He talks about greater government accountability, which of course didn't happen. In 2012, a dam near Campos de Cortezazes bursts after a series of floods and landslides and forced the authorities to evacuate thousands of people before the flooding became too dangerous. 2013, thousands of people left stranded after brush fires devastated the island of Tasmania. Authorities believe a combination of drought, a heat wave, and high winds caused the fires. And 2014, a small plane carrying three people had to make an emergency landing in the Bronx after experiencing engine trouble. Had to land on the Major Deegan Expressway after traffic was stopped to give it a clear pathway. All right, let's see what else we've got, if anything. In 1349, Margaretha of Bavaria names her son Wilhelm V, Earl of Holland and Zealand. In 1463, the French poet Francois Villon banished from Paris. In 1500, Duke Ludovico Sforza's troops reconquer Milan. He was the Duke of Milan. 1527, Felix Manns, a leader of the Anabaptist congregation in Zurich, is executed by drowning. 1709, the Great Frost begins during the night. Sudden cold snap remains Europe's coldest ever winter. Thousands are killed across the continent. Crops fail in France. 1776, the Assembly of New Hampshire adopts its first state constitution. In 1834, the Kiowa Indians record this as the night the stars fell. Also in 1836, Davy Crockett arrives in Nacogdoches, Texas to aid the Revolution. In 1840, records show 95,820 licensed public houses in England as of this date, and quite a number of unlicensed houses. 1841, James Clark Ross of the UK is the first to enter the pack ice near the Ross Ice Shelf. 1854, the steamship San Francisco is wrecked off the U.S. East Coast. 300 die. 1861, on this date, 250 federal troops are sent from New York to Fort Sumter. 1896, The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, written by Robert Louis Stevenson, is published on this date. 1887, the first U.S. School of Librarianship opens up at Columbia University. Now that's a career for you. 1892, the first successful aerial photograph is made. 1911, San Francisco has its first air meet. 1919, the left-wing Spartacus organization stages a revolt in Berlin. Afraid of the spread of Bolshevism, German troops brutally suppress the uprising. 1927, Fox Studios establishes Movietone. 1930, Bonnie Parker meets Clyde Barrow for the first time at Clarence Clay's house. 1941, British Australian troops conquer Bardia and Libya. 42, 55 German tanks reach North Africa. 1 day that will live forever in the minds of children. In 1945, Pepe Le Pew debuts in Warner Brothers cartoon, Odorable Kitty. Always like cartoons that had Pepe Le Pew, and especially the one and only Bugs Bunny. All right. On that note, I think we have finished up our little history segment. You know, we've been talking about haunted hotels and other places across the West. There's certainly been a lot of them. Place I enjoyed going in New Mexico is called Eagle's Nest, located in the Moreno Valley in the midst of the beautiful Sangre de Cristo Mountains. It's nestled between the state's two highest peaks, Baldy Mountain and Wheeler Peak. It sits at the junction of Highway 64 and State Highway 38. It's at 8,300 feet above sea level. Rests on the western slope of Baldy Mountain. That is an area that has a lot of gold rush history. Before the miners arrived, the area was called home by the Ute and Jicarilla Apaches. They roamed the area in search of game and golden feathers for their ceremonial worship. When Elizabethtown, just 5.5 miles to the north, was in its heyday, the Eagle's Nest area was used mainly for ranching and farming. In 1873, Charles and Frank Springer founded the C.S. Ranch on the banks of the Cimarron. In 1907, they applied for a permit to build the Eagle Nest Dam. Now, it was almost 10 years before the Springers could hire the engineering firm of Bartlett and Ramey of San Antonio to design and build the dam. It was not until 1916 that construction on the dam began and was completed in 1918. And it was designed to store the surplus waters of the Cimarron River for power plants, mining, and irrigation. And most of the labor for building the dam was provided by the Taos Pueblo Indians. It's the largest privately constructed dam in the U.S. It's 400 feet wide, stands 140 feet above the riverbank, and then its crest is 9.5 feet thick and 45.2 feet thick at its base. Supposedly, eagles built nests in the sides of this dam, and that's how it got its name. The dam created the Eagle Nest Lake, which varies between 1,500 and 3,000 surface acres, depending on weather, of course. Surrounded by rolling pastures and stunning mountains, the fishermen began to arrive when the lake was stocked with trout. Of course, along with the fishermen, entrepreneurs arrived, building businesses and transforming this quiet farming community into a tourist mecca. And then, of course, it provided entertainment to the visiting cowboys and fishermen and other tourists. Now, one of the biggest industries, surprisingly enough, was cutting and selling ice that came from the lake. T.D. Neal hired men to drive out on the lake and cut block ice that was stored in ice houses that were filled with sawdust. Now, jobs are, as you might guess, were somewhat scarce in the area, and many families survived the winters by ice cutting and trapping. 1920s, illegal gambling was introduced to the area. Eagle's Nest became a popular spot along the road from Santa Fe to Raton, where politicians and other travelers attended the horse races. This was a favorite stopover for dignitaries. They were said to have caused quite a ruckus with their gambling, drinking, and dancing. Now, in 1927, Walter Gant, an oil man from Oklahoma, hired a businessman by the name of William Tyre to oversee the construction of the greatest resort that Eagle Nest had ever seen. It was to be called the Eagle's Nest Lodge. Now, Tyre lived in a cabin on the Gant property and oversaw the many details of building this lodge. When it was completed, he stayed on to manage the lodge, which featured 12 rooms, a lounge, a restaurant, horseback riding, fishing, hunting expeditions for the many travelers who stopped to enjoy the magnificent view of Eagle Nest Lake. It was considered by far the finest lodge for miles. It soon expanded to include a guest annex that featured 5 studio units with their own bathrooms and kitchenettes. They also connected the main building to the Casa Loma via a walkway lounge they called the Loafer's Lounge. Local saloons heartily welcomed the travelers, rolling slot machines out onto the boardwalk early in the morning to entice gamblers. Judge Neblett, for whom the Colin Neblett Wildlife Area is named, was a frequent visitor as well as a number of governors. Now, though gambling was illegal, of course, it was obviously overlooked by the politicians. In fact, it's said that by several of the locals that when illegal gambling was first introduced to Eagle's Nest in the 1920s, the owner of most of the slot machines was the local sheriff. He also owned them not only in Eagle Nest, but in Red River and Colfax County. Then, a story came out in 2003 that from Jerry Ficklin, a local historian and writer, who once lived in Eagle's Nest and spent many summers there between the years of 45 and 60, that there's no documents to support the sheriff owned everything. That's just a local legend. The El Monte Hotel, known as the Laguna Vista today, as well as Doughbelly's Cafe, now the building that houses Julio's, the Gold Pan and Eagle's Lodge offered roulette and gaming tables, as well as slot machines. And slot machines were found in a lot of the stores in town. Eagle's Nest was in its heyday during the 30s, with disputes often resulting in shots fired back and forth across Main Street. Reportedly, one saloon owner along the road that travels north from Eagle's Nest to Idlewild was known to provide free wine to those that came through his doors. And of course, the free wine would inevitably lead to fights and discord among the rowdy customer, which the saloon advertised as free entertainment. Now, within Eagle's Nest, there's the Laguna Vista Saloon, referred to by the locals as Gunny. Originally called the El Monte, it was allegedly built with stone railroad ties, which can still be seen in some of the rooms. Would-be innkeepers transported the petrified railroad ties from Ute Park to Elizabethtown for two summers, but when he came back after the winter, the railroad ties were gone and a new hotel been built in Therma, which later changed its name to Eagle Nest. Behind the original saloon was a 17-foot-deep hand-dug well and a number of ice houses. Now, in the 20s and 30s, El Monte was one of the busiest saloons in the area when the politicians stopped over on their way to the horse races in Raton, New Mexico. They came to partake of the many roulette gaming tables and slot machines offered in the saloons, inns, and businesses in Eagle's Nest. It was during this period the El Monte's name was changed to the Laguna Vista Lodge and operated by a couple named Gene and Pearl Wilson. At this point in time, the Wilsons often had to protect their gambling profits when transporting them to the saloon to their living quarters by carrying guns. Early 50s, Bob and Edith Sullivan bought the property from the Wilsons, leasing the restaurant to Walter Ragsdale, who operated it for a number of years. As Eagle's Nest Lake's popularity began to grow with the tourists, Sullivan's advertised for college girls to help staff the lodge, restaurant, and saloon. The small village of Eagle's Nest couldn't provide the staffing needed for the popular tourist destination. 1964, the new hotel was built next to the original hotel to accommodate additional guests. 1971, Bert Clemens bought the property from the Sullivans and has it to this day. Bob and Edith Sullivan's son, Robert, stayed on in Eagle's Nest for many years, was honored for his 25 years as fire chief, counselor, and mayor. Edith Sullivan, who operated the Laguna Vista for over 20 years, was honored as a grand marshal of the July 4th parade in 2003. Unfortunately, she died in May of 2004. So, you have to ask, since we're talking about haunted hotels, does this old hotel saloon have ghostly visitors similar to those to the St. James and Cimarron? And the answer, of course, is yes. Now, those that believe the ghosts are there, most have said they've never personally encountered them. But at one point, a psychic visited the property who counted at least 22 ghosts hanging about the place. One employee reported to Mr. Clemens while she was in the kitchen, she heard the vacuum running in the dining room. But when she went to investigate who was doing the vacuuming, there was nobody there, and the vacuum was sitting still and silent. Now, the current manager, whose name is Jim, also indicates that eerie things happen, such as the piano in the dining room playing when there's nobody there. A dining table chair is pulled up next to the piano, as if somebody is sat to play. Staff will replace the chair next to the one at the dining tables, and it'll be back in front of the piano again very shortly. Customers and staff both have reported a woman in dance hall dress often appears and then vanishes toward the side of the hidden staircase. Okie dokie. In addition to the woman in the dance hall dress, now since it was A lot of illegal gambling going on. Of course, there were secret passages and things like that. And hidden staircases. This spirit is said to be that of a woman on her honeymoon with her husband. The husband went out one day hunting and never came back. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking about mysterious disappearances at quite a number of locations, and Eagle's Nest is one of them. A distraught young woman was left stuck and destitute and went on to become a saloon girl in order to support herself. And supposedly it's her spirit that lingers in the hotel searching for her missing husband. Now, did he die? Did he just run off? No one ever knew. An old staircase that led from the hotel lobby to the upstairs rooms had been boarded up. Most often the ghost of Gunny, as she's called, disappears at the site where this staircase used to be. Now, a former employee of the Laguna Vista, Christy Dukes, was a cook in the restaurant in 1999. She said she encountered several spooky visits from a spirit that's said to have once been a saloon girl in the old lodge. According to Christy, both she and her mother, Jane, who worked in the restaurant, would often encounter these visits whenever the music they were listening to in the kitchen was anything other than classic rock or country music. Now, Christy would often like to listen to rap. But change the music, strange things would occur. On one occasion, a marble rolling pin was thrown at her. On another occasion, pots and pans fell off the wall. Once when odd things were happening, Jane asked Christy to turn off the music, but when she switched the stereo to the off position, the music continued to play anyway. So she unplugged the stereo and thought it had no batteries, and she found out later it did not, but the music continued to play. So at this point, the two left at the end of the evening. When they got back the next day, the stereo was silent. It had gone off sometime during the night. It's in the Laguna Vista restaurant dining room, which is once the hotel lobby that held the secret staircase to the upstairs room, that the ghost is most often encountered. Spookiest story actually occurred when Christy brought her own daughter, Rainey, who was two at the time, to work one day. She put little jingle bells on her daughter's shoes so she'd keep track of her while she was working. Suddenly, Rainey walked into the kitchen very gently and slowly and making sure the bells on her shoes didn't ring. Christy said she looked very odd when she asked the little girl what was wrong. The little girl said the lady told me to stop making noise. When Christy asked Rainey where the lady was, Rainey led her mother into the dining room and pointed at someone the little girl could see and said, "That lady." Well, Christy couldn't see anybody, but even so, Rainey insisted her mother take the bells off her shoes. Well, the locals say the hotel caught fire about 20 years ago and closed, and that's all they'll say. And there's no doubt that the old hotel did catch fire because there are obvious signs of fire damage in two different locations in the old hotel. But that raises the question, when did the fire take place? And was the fire the cause of the closing? At least one person said that a later fire was started in a second location, probably by vagrants who are living in the deserted old lodge. But still, neither fire succeeded in demolishing this once luxury resort. Just outside the front door, the lake still beckons the guests for fishing and boating, and to the right are the remains of a man-made pool and a garden, as well as what appears to be stables. Several outbuildings are housed on the property, including private cabins and the caretaker's home. So you have to ask what happened to this place, and nobody seems to know, though it's been said that when questioned, one resident said that both he and his mother and his aunt worked there, but they wouldn't talk about what happened. And at least one person from Angel Fire, which is another community in New Mexico, speculated the place had become something of a speakeasy with all manner of vices, including gambling and prostitution, and that was the reason the locals were reluctant to talk about it. But of course, that's just rumor and speculation. There's no basis in fact supplied by anybody who had been associated with the old lodge. But the interesting thing is that I talked to one or two people who had gone exploring, as they called it, breaking and entering, as I call it, in the old facility, said they heard movement and the sounds of footsteps, though they never did find anybody. So maybe the ghost still wanders the lodge. Then in Escondida, New Mexico, we got to New Mexico State Tuberculosis Sanitarium, built by the Civilian Conservation Corps, opened its doors in 1932. Now, for those who are not familiar with the CCC, or Civilian Conservation Corps, it was an organization created during the Depression to literally create jobs. They would undertake any project suggested as long as it created a certain number of jobs. Now, certainly there had to be some kind of need for the project, but the need requirement was stretched almost to the breaking point. In the case of the New Mexico State Tuberculosis Sanitarium, it originally had 50 beds, but was expanded to eventually have 1,200. Tuberculosis was a widespread disease at that time. Several structures comprised the location. The reason the site looked like the spokes of a half of a wagon wheel when you viewed it from the air. The most predominant today are the dorms where patients were housed. Now, altogether, there were 9 wards for patients. Main hospital is now hidden back behind the New Mexico State Police headquarters. And this building had an explosion-proof operating room with glass block windows. There's also a kitchen, dining facility, a recreation hall, while 16mm films were shown to staff and patients. Now, in its early days, the hospital did very well. Service was described as outstanding by patients and staff alike. But that would, as in most cases, eventually change. By October 1952, many unfavorable reports about the hospital had been circulated. Alpha Simpson, in a letter to the state governor, claimed the biggest problem was the patients released from the sanitarium had to be treated for improper nutrition and lack of sanitation. Well, no one will say why, but shortly after this, the facility was closed. The old hospital was converted and became a battery manufacturing plant called Eagle Pitcher. And this factory operated for many, many years before it was closed down. Today, this historic old facility is abandoned with piles of trash in most of the buildings. There's a bottle dump just west of the main site where there are mounds of old medicine bottles. And for those that are not familiar with them, old medicine bottles can bring a pretty penny in the collecting circuit. New Mexico State Police have also used the area as a shooting range, so you'll find spent brass from rounds fired by officers around the dump area as well. Now, this whole area has changed greatly over the years. Major changes, a road that now runs through the site. And the New Mexico State Police has also built a regional headquarters near the old hospital. Now, folks who've wandered that area have reported seeing glowing balls of light moving about the ruins of the sanitarium after dark. And there's also been unusual noises reported to include screams and shouts heard coming from the old dorm buildings. Apparently something still walks the night. Then one of the most famous haunted hotels in New Mexico is the St. James in Cimarron, New Mexico. St. James Hotel began life as a small saloon in 1873. This two-story hotel has been in continual operation since it was added to the saloon in 1880. Entering the St. James Hotel in Cimarron, New Mexico is like stepping back in time. The hallway of the guest area are decorated with deep red carpets and red brocade wallpaper. Small ventilation windows above the doors are hand-painted in different Western scenes. Antiques, most original to the hotel, abound. Such wonderful pieces of 5-foot-tall iron candelabra lamp, vintage chairs, pump organ, even a roulette table that used to be in the gambling area of the original saloon are scattered about the hallways. On the walls are framed photos of the famous guests the hotel once catered to. Now, the rooms are all named after former guests. For instance, repeat customers such as Buffalo Bill Cody, Jesse James, and Zane Grey often chose to stay in the same room each time they visited. And the rooms they were partial to now bear their names. And the history of the old hotel is equally as fascinating. 1862, upon the recommendation of President Grant, Lincoln appointed a young Frenchman named Henry Lambert as his personal chef, and a position that Lambert held until that fateful day in 1865. After Lincoln's assassination, Henry made his way west in search of gold, but instead of discovering gold, he discovered he could make a good living cooking for the miners in the small New Mexico boom town called Elizabethtown, also referred to as E-Town. While passing through E-Town, Lucian Maxwell, land baron in New Mexico territory, had the opportunity to taste Henry Lambert's cooking. He was so impressed, he offered Lambert a job cooking for him in nearby Cimarron, which is Spanish for wild or unbroken. Henry, of course, accepted the offer and moved to Cimarron. In 1872, while still working for Lucian Maxwell, Henry began building Lambert's Saloon and Billiard Hall. And it wasn't long before Lambert's Saloon became wildly popular, catering to the cowboys and traders and miners and frontiersmen and many others traveling this last leg of the Santa Fe Trail. In fact, the saloon did so well, in fact, that in 1880, Henry added 30 guest rooms and the St. James Hotel was born. Now, the hotel was considered at the time to be one of the most elegant, luxurious hotels west of the Mississippi, and it soon became just as popular, if not more so, as the saloon itself. Before long, the hotel guest registry led like a who's who of the West. Jesse James often stayed there, always in room 14, and always signing the registry with his alias, R.H. Howard. Buffalo Bill Cody met Annie Oakley in Cimarron, and they both stayed in the hotel while planning and rehearsing the Wild West show. In fact, they took an entire village of Indians from the Cimarron area with them when they took the show on the road. Wyatt Earp, his brother Morgan, and their wives spent 3 nights at the St. James on their way to Tombstone. After leaving the hotel, they made their way to the small town of Las Vegas, New Mexico, where they met and became friends with a gentleman by the name of J.J. Doc Holliday. Zane Grey stayed at the hotel while writing his novel, Fighting Caravans. And Lew Wallace, governor of New Mexico Territory, wrote part of the book Ben-Hur while staying there. Other famous and infamous guests included Doc Holliday himself, Billy the Kid, Bat Masterson, Kit Carson, Clay Allison, and Pat Garrett. Probably the most famous unknown person to stay at the hotel was Bob Ford. His claim to fame was the fact he supposedly killed Jesse James, though there are many who say that he assisted James in literally starting a new life under a new name. Not surprisingly, with this combination of guests, the hotel boasts a very violent history. At least 26 men are killed in gunfights at the hotel. The ceiling of the saloon, which is currently the dining room, still has 22 original bullet holes in it. Luckily, when Henry built the hotel, he had the foresight to add 3 feet of hard wood above the tin ceiling of the saloon. That kept stray bullets from penetrating the floor of the upstairs guest rooms. That would be rather disconcerting to be sitting in your room and bullets come up through the floor. As time changed, railroads began taking the place of horse and buggy, and mining and ranching became less profitable, and the Cimarron's popularity began to dwindle. Eventually, the once popular and elegant St. James Hotel fell into disrepair. Through the years, it went largely uninhabited and passed from owner to owner until the mid-1980s, when this beautiful old hotel was purchased and restored to its former luxury. Today, the St. James is once again a hotel, but much to its credit, it's far from being modern. No phones, no radios, no televisions. Almost all the furniture is original to the hotel, from the antique chandeliers to the beds and dressers in the guest rooms. Stay at today's St. James Hotels, remarkably similar to a stay during the heyday of the Wild West. Now, as you might guess, a hotel with this type of history certainly has its share of ghosts. Second floor of the hotel is the most active, with stories of cold spots and the smell of cigar smoke lingering in the halls. Like most hotels, smoking's not allowed today. Prior manager said, "You never see him, but you feel and hear him." Another report from a former owner states she walked into the dining room and saw a pleasant-looking cowboy standing behind her in a mirror at the bar. Spiritual activity at the hotel has been featured on the popular television shows Unsolved Mysteries and The Current Affair. In room 18, according to the story, one night in 1881, the owner of the St. James is playing cards with some men in the second floor card room. It was getting late, and the men had drunk a fair amount of whiskey, and the stakes were high. So high, confident he'd win, the owner bet the hotel. However, a guest at the hotel, Mr. Thomas James Wright, still felt he had a winning hand and stayed in the game when all the others folded. When the bets were made and the cards were shown, Thomas James Wright proved victorious. Satisfied with his win, he decided it was time to go to bed. He made his way down the hall and began to turn the corner toward his room. He was shot in the back. Well, he continued on to his room, which was room 18, shut the door, and bled to death. Maybe the death of Thomas James Wright was so traumatic his spirit still remains locked in time. Whatever may be the reason, room 18 is considered the most haunted room in the hotel. It is so haunted, in fact, that nobody's allowed to go into the room, much less sleep in it. Said residing in the room is TJ's very angry, malevolent spirit. Now, certainly he was cheated out of ownership of the hotel by being killed. Employees at the hotel say nobody's around in the room because that whenever anybody goes in, something bad happens in the hotel. One former owner said she was pushed down while in the room, and on another occasion saw a ball of angry orange light floating in the upper corner. In that room is only a bed frame without a mattress, a coat rack, a rocking chair, and a bureau that has been made a shrine to the Old West. Sitting on top of the bureau is a Jack Daniels bottle, a basin and pitcher, a hand of cards, an Ace Copenhagen tin, and several shot glasses. And on the wall is a bad painting of a half-naked woman. Others have said the real reason that the management won't anybody sleep in room 18 is that there's been more than the average number of mysterious deaths in that room. Now, for those with a doubting frame of mind, there was, in fact, a Thomas James Wright born in New Mexico in 1859, and one of the old guest registries does show a T.J. Wright stayed in the hotel several nights in 1881. The story of him winning the hotel just might be true. Then we have the Mary Lambert room, or Lambert, if you like the French pronunciation. Another spirit that has believed to occupy the hotel is that of Mary Lambert, wife of Henry, the man that built the St. James. She lived many years in the hotel, gave birth to her children there, watched as two of her babies died there, and eventually in December 1926 died there herself. People who work at the hotel call her the protector. They firmly believe her presence is still there, and they believe she watches out for the hotel and the people in it. It's said you can often smell her perfume when her presence is near. Many staff members, previous owners, and guests swear they've indeed smelled it. It's also said if you're staying in her room and you leave the window open, she'll tap on it incessantly until you close it. On other occasions, a milky, transparent woman can be seen moving about the hallways. Now, employees of the St. James are given the option of living in the hotel. One of the employees, a young woman, decided to stay in the hotel and was given the Kate Lambert room, which is the last room on the right at the end of the second floor family wing. That room is directly across from the Mary Lambert room and directly next to room 18. Said she was almost as soon as she began to stay in the room, she had trouble sleeping. Many times at night, she'd wake up, although there was nothing specific such as a noise that would explain her being awoken. Due to her lack of sleep, she was usually exhausted the next day. Now, because of the hotel's history, ghost hunters and psychics often visit the hotel, so she asked one of the psychics to come to her room. Psychic told her the spirit of TJ was trying to possess her, but on the plus side, the spirit of Mary Lambert was protecting her from TJ. Psychics told this young lady that it was this nightly spectral battle that was keeping her, that kept waking her up. Well, she liked the room in which she was staying and didn't want to move, but the psychic told her she stayed in the room, eventually the spirit of TJ would succeed and possess her. Just to be on the safe side, she moved to another room and found she slept soundly each night, no longer waking up in the early hours of the morning. In addition to the well-known spirits haunting the St. James, employees have reported that many non-specific hauntings occur on a daily basis. There are cold spots, things constantly falling off the walls and shelves, and the computer and phone at the front desk behave erratically. Cameras and video equipment often break or just don't work correctly. The dining room that used to be the main salon or saloon still houses the original mirrored bar. Many guests reported seeing the reflection of a cowboy sitting at one of the tables. Only when they look around, they discover there's nobody else in the room. Hanging above the second floor landing is a large crystal chandelier. During restoration, one of the previous owners discovered every time she'd turn it off before leaving, it'd be on again the next time she, by the time she got to the parking area. This happened repeatedly, even though there was no one in the hotel. And since they were in the process of restoration, she thought maybe it was an electrical problem, but the electricians found nothing to account for the light coming on by itself. So now the staff just leaves this ornate chandelier burning 24 hours a day. One employee who was working the front desk reported he very clearly heard a high-pitched shriek coming from the far corner of the lobby. Looking up from his work, he was dumbfounded to see absolutely nobody on that side of the room. Looking around, his eyes rested on three of the guests mingling at the other side of the lobby, apparently not having heard the scream. They appeared to be completely unfazed by everything going on. Now, apparently, the original hotel isn't the only place with strange happenings. In the 1980s, a modern 10-room annex was built onto the hotel. Rooms in the annex all have the amenities, including phones and cable TV. Said that there had been unexplained activity in the annex. According to one employee, there were two girls staying in one of the rooms in the annex who had an unusual experience. It seemed one of the girls was taking a shower and the other girl opened the bathroom door. The girl in the shower yelled for a friend to close the door and let her finish her shower. The door shut, but a few minutes later it opened again. By the time the girl taking a shower finished, this had happened three or four times, and angry, the wet girl wrapped a towel around her and stormed out of the bathroom to yell at her friend for continuing to open and shut the door. To her surprise, her friend wasn't in the room. She finally talked to that friend, and the girl that had been in the shower discovered whoever or whatever had been opening and closing the shower door wasn't her friend. She hadn't even been in the room at the time. And there's another friendly spirit known to inhabit the old hotel. The owners have called this spirit the little imp, as it likes to torment new employees in the kitchen and dining room. Described as a small man with a pockmarked face, the little imp's been known to burst glasses, relight candles, move objects in front of the nervous new hires, and that would certainly give almost anybody a case of the heebie-jeebies. On that note, we come to the end of tonight's show. We've run out of time. We'll be talking about more hauntings and strange happenings in our next show. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.